Have you ever wondered how they got their start? What motivates them every morning to go out and do their thing? Where did they get their creative inspirations from? What drives them to continue to do good for those individuals in the community? If these are thoughts that you've had, I want you to sit back, relax, and listen to your hosts, Orlando and Julian, have a candid conversation on the Invincibly Broken podcast with these amazing individuals. So, Julian, I know I say this a lot every time we start a new podcast, but I am really excited about today.
Yes, I've actually been, I think I made it on social media pretty clear that I've been homeschooling my five-year-old, and all I've been thinking about today was end this so I can record tonight. Right.
Absolutely. I think a lot of our listeners can relate to you. I'm sure a lot of people have become de facto teachers in the last couple of weeks, but we're excited because, as you know, on our show, we have changed our position a little bit and our content to gear towards more of men's point of view on a series of topics, right? Well, and one topic two topics really in general that Julian and I are super passionate about is health, not only mental health, but physical health. And most of the listeners out there who've heard us before, or if you're listening for the first time, I don't think there is a human being alive that doesn't have an experience with cancer, hasn't been touched by cancer in some kind of way. I've shared my story. I'm in remission of 5 years of thyroid cancer. Julian has had his family touched by cancer. And, you know, we try to talk about these type of issues and we try to bring things to light. We have a tendency to make it as humorous as possible so it's more digestible by our listeners. And, you know, but when Julian and I started to see the feedback from our listeners regarding these topics of mental health and cancer and some of the other topics we touched, we knew that people are taking what we have to say seriously. So we want to make sure that we're bringing good content to you guys, our listeners, as well as, more knowledge and actionable items for you guys to take home on various different issues. So today is a really special treat because we're having a candid conversation with two individuals who are experts in prostate cancer and advocates in prostate cancer, and specifically in the veteran space. So another thing that we're super passionate about, because we know Julian is a retired Army, and it's something that we all have passion for today. It's the month of September, which is also Prostate Awareness Month as well. So we thought it'd be a great time to have this conversation. So real quick, I'm going to let our guests go ahead and introduce yourselves. So Susie, ladies first.
Well, since nobody can pronounce my last name, that's usually why they make me do it myself. My name is Susie Schlarnitzauer, and I am a former caregiver to my brother and an staunch advocate for Zero the End of Prostate Cancer, and an organization that I've been affiliated with since 2013.
Excellent. And Mike?
Great. Well, I'm a friend of Susie's, and I'm Mike Crosby, retired Navy commander. I was a Naval Academy graduate in 1983, chose the aviation side of things, and I became flew F-14s and F-18 aircraft.
Wow!
And I was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2015 at the Phoenix VA. So it was a bit of a misdiagnosis, which led to a little bit of the metastasis of my disease, which we continue to deal with today. But I formed Veterans Prostate Cancer Awareness, a nonprofit to raise awareness and educate men, veterans and active duty alike, on the need for early screening and all things sort of prostate cancer. But we've recently partnered with Zero, the End of Prostate Cancer, why Susie and I are both here. And we're joining forces now to reach across the country and utilizing Zero's incredible outreach. And I'm running the focus to raise awareness amongst the veteran population about prostate cancer issues.
So what exactly is Zero?
Zero is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization that is focused on creating Generation Zero, that first generation where no man has to die from prostate cancer. And they have a very, very strong advocacy component, an educational component, and they're focused very, very diligently on education, outreach, patient assistance. Mike and I go to Washington, D.C. He gets there more often than I do because of his veteran affiliation. But we go in and we try to advocate for prostate cancer research funding. And this is for sustenance of the congressionally directed medical research program, and the prostate cancer research program falls under that. Excellent. And it's a research program that focuses on high risk, high reward research, and is able to get medications and diagnostic tools from benchtop to bedside far quicker than where they seem to come through the other normal channels.
Briefly talked about the congressional directed CDRMP.
Medical research program. Yeah, right.
Medical research program, because that is a mouthful in conversation. And, sir, we are all about acronyms. So CDRMP. So I did a little bit of research on it. So I know that this was instilled back in 1992, correct?
Yes.
And so, sir, let me ask you, when it comes to, so I understand that you are the CEO of the Veterans Prostate
Cancer Awareness.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I keep getting that wrong. But so let me ask you a question, sir. When it comes to that, I know obviously you have the veterans, tie into that and things like that, but how did you become active with the CDRMP? So I understand, before I go any further, that you sit on the consumer review panel of this particular organization, correct?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell us what that panel, what is the main goal? Obviously, I understand that it's for research, development, things like that, funding like that. But I mean, as far as the review panel, what does that entail? And how did you become more involved with the CDRMP?
It's so the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program is, as people that are listening may understand, it's a funding line actually in the Department of Defense budget. So it's in the same budget that that buys bullets and airplanes and MREs, right? But it also, where we're doing research for weapon systems, we also have allocated funds, or the Congress has allocated funds to do research for various medical programs that are going to support active duty and veterans alike. Prostate cancer being one of them, primarily a male-oriented service. We still have the largest population, right? The greater population is males, and so prostate cancer is one of those issues that affects us. The budget of that program has gone up to about $110 million a year. And that's really thanks to the efforts of both the program itself, but also Zero, the End of Prostate Cancer, who have really pushed and advocated for on Capitol Hill by flying in members from, survivors from all over the country and visiting with their congressmen, because that's really what it takes, is face-to-face advocacy. And that's really where, Susie and I met and walked the halls of Congress to tell our stories, right? To tell what's going on and why, why it's important. Now, by joining Zero initially and 3 years ago, as an advocate, as a survivor and an advocate, we learned about an opportunity to volunteer for the consumer review panels, and I signed up for it. I just volunteered for it. You know, they tell you never volunteer for anything, right? Well, guess what? I volunteered, right? And it's one of these things where it's you volunteer, you fill out paperwork, you got to survive, you got to be able to participate, have some time to do that, and it's a very high level set of discussions. What happens is all across the country and around the world. This year, we reviewed proposals from England and from Germany as well. So it's an international Canada international program where researchers will send in proposals, and I sit on a board or a panel. There's a number of panels that review these proposals for funding, for research funding, and they have a patient on every one of the panels. And the reason why is it's different than a lot of other research organizations is that, and we have equal weight on our grading and our scoring, which is really a different thing for a lot of other, proposals for money and that sort of thing is that, and the doctors that are the scientists that are, the world's best scientists in this subject matter are sitting there, and they do take into consideration a patient's viewpoint in this. And so we have a voice in how the research is scored, how the proposals are scored. Does it make sense from a patient consumer perspective? I mean, if there's some research going on, and we had the discussion this time about one. I can't give too many details, but it was talking about life extension of maybe a month, of 4 weeks, right? And but the side effect profile that it would give you is horrible, right? It was really would have been very tough, very difficult. And a couple of doctors wanted to do it one doctor wanted to do it because he thought that it had maybe some legs to other science and things like that. But it was a high risk type of a thing. And we sort of voted against each other, and they ended up taking my vote. So which I thought was spectacular. I mean, I really felt empowered, I guess, as a patient to have a voice in some of this development.
That's really important.
Yeah.
To have a voice. A lot of people don't have that voice.
Yeah. And, Orlando, I think one of the things that, this type of a program, as well as what Mike and I do with Zero, is it gives us a voice. And it gives us a voice not just in our home, in our own city, but to be able to, like Mike said, walk the halls of Congress and be able to sit face to face with the staff members from our elected leaders or the elected leaders themselves and be able to tell that personal story about why I'm passionate about this and why they really need to listen and why their vote for this is important.
Yeah,
and we have the opportunity to make a difference. Yeah.
It's very interesting. I find it fascinating, Mike, about you being able to have that power, not only for yourself, but for the individual patients that you guys review. Because I know with my own story, you go to a doctor and the doctor says, "Hey, you have cancer." And then you go through, denial and the grief. And then, but now you're looking at this doctor, this professional to fix you, right? To heal you. I don't know anything about this, right? Yeah. All I am to him is, I know a lot of doctors care, but I'm a science project. Like they're going to try to figure out what will work for me, like every other person that's probably been diagnosed with something, cancer or whatever, you go home and you Google, and then that puts you through a tailspin of information. So it's difficult as a patient to really understand if these treatments are really good for you. Because a lot of people don't know that you really have to break your body down in order to fight cancer, regardless of what kind of cancer you have. Sometimes they break you down to near death. And all this with putting your hands and faith into someone you've never met before, who's supposed to be the expert and the professional.
Right.
And it's kind of a couple of things. I mean, there's a couple of lessons in there. I think, and Orlando, I agree with you that a couple of things. One is look for the best, right? Look for the best, most experienced guy out there. Always get a second opinion. Yep. Because, and if, somebody, yeah, if somebody objects to your second opinion, then fire them and go on anyway, because that's something that really should not be even questioned. It should be encouraged more so than questioned, right? And with this cancer now, with prostate cancer, there's so many new drugs and so many new modalities and so many treatment pathways that are out there and that are coming online every day. The ones I'm just finishing now, I'm the 186th patient that's ever had this thing, right? Wow. So this is new stuff, this cutting edge things that are going on. And, you know, we have to spread the word. I mean, it's an education type of a challenge, and we need to do it. I mean, we need to get it out there. But because one is the physicians and really the guys in the VA, you think about it, they're overwhelmed, they're overworked, they're trying to hire as fast as they can. They don't have enough oncologists. We know that. We don't have enough urologists. And, you know, the cancer numbers are growing, you know, by the month they're growing, right? So it's, and we don't know why, but we know that it's, we're seeing an increase in veterans with prostate cancer. There's an increased incidence rate. It's probably about a 40% higher rate than the general population. And
is it like 1 in 5?
Yeah, we say 1 in 5. It's about, I'll give you some quick statistics here.
Okay, right, go ahead.
So in the VA today, there's about 9 million people in the VA are under treatment, male and female. About 7 million of them are males over the age of 40.
Wow.
And then we're also now, right now, there's a study that was finished in November of last year that identified all the medical records. They digitized and used some artificial intelligence programs to read all of these things. And it's an incredibly powerful system. But they used prostate cancer at the encouragement of a few of us as a test case. And so they counted all of the prostate cancer patients in the VA. There's over 489,000 of us that are dealing with prostate cancer today, right now.
That's a big number.
And we're just dealing with the VA, correctly?
And 16,000 of those guys, of that 489, are metastatic, okay?
Meaning that that
is spread. Yeah. It's metastasized.
And we get about 13 to 15,000 new cases every year. Okay, every year, and that's even without the standard of screening early, right? The screening guidelines that the government puts out now are, we fought for years to get it. It used to be zero. The U.S. government used to say, because of this group called United States
Preventive Services Task Force, the U.S.
You got it, Susan. Yeah, their guidelines were don't ever screen for cancer, for prostate cancer, because the screening will cause more damage than the disease, which was
a false positives is what they were complaining about, is the probability of a false positive.
Jeez.
It was bad advertising, basically. And it really hurt the veteran population, because now, even today, they're saying don't even start. The standards are now, don't even start looking for it. Don't even start screening until you're 50. Well, we're finding prostate cancer in guys down at late 30s, right? And I mean, quite a few. And then so it's one of these things where, with an increased rate of diagnosis and a lower age, right? And you just really have to start. You know, you got to go screen. It's a blood test and a DRE, right? So digital rectal exam.
Yeah, what you guys hate.
Well.
Listen, as long as everything's healthy, they don't have to buy me flowers or chocolate. They can.
No, you don't got to kiss me when you're done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right. Yeah. And if I can tell you that women didn't have to go through the same thing, they're not checking my prostate because I don't have one, but we have to go through that rectal exam too.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a cultural thing that gets brought up around men's health in general.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We try to bring up, and then men, traditionally men avoid the doctor. Right. I mean, who makes your doctor's appointment? It's your wife, your significant other, or your whatever. You just avoid it because you just don't want to go. It's macho, you know, I don't need to go to the doctor. What I try to tell people now is, or we're trying to promote, is put it on your business calendar. Just schedule the time and go to the doctor. Just do it once a year and you're going to be okay. Just keep going. Just start a relationship and get engaged with that physician. And it really, just that one step, we would be amazed at the cost savings in our medical system in the United States. If every man just went to the doctor once a year, and it would be incredible.
And that's something that we preach on this podcast all the time, is the overall ignorance of man, of trying to be manly, and I am made of steel and nothing can hurt me, or I'll just worry about it later, you know. Yeah. And it's that type of attitude that you find yourself on the wrong side of your health when something does come up. Yeah. Did you have a question, Julian?
Yeah. And the thing is with that, just to kind of caveat on what Orlando said, I mean, what we're trying to do with this podcast is just kind of say that very traditional, very male chauvinistic way of thinking is actually literally going to get us killed. But I did have one question. So Mike, you know, we're talking about the VA as far as cases and things like that. Now, I went on the Zero website and it did very big. Said 3.1 million men in this country have been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Now, that is a huge number. With that being said, is there a way, just so that the listeners, because sometimes, you know, 3.1 million, okay, you know, I could get, you know, so many Starbucks coffee for like the next 30 years with 3.1 million, but can you break that down? Because, like, for example, I work in an all male office.
Yeah.
And there's about 8 of us in that office. And I know that 3.1 million is a large number, but if I was to say out of X amount of males, how many do we have a concrete number, or at least an estimated number, one in how many will be actually diagnosed with prostate cancer?
I can answer that for you. 1 in 9 will be diagnosed with prostate cancer at some point in their life. And to categorize that 3.1 million men living with prostate cancer today, that's roughly the population of Chicago.
Wow. That's an insane stat. On
the other side of that, every 16 minutes, another American man dies from prostate cancer. That's second about 91 deaths a day.
Yeah, second leading cause of death. Now, and if caught early, it's curable. 99% curable. You catch it early.
5 year survivability is 99%.
And what stage is that usually? What's early? Is that stage 1, stage 2, or?
Yeah, prostate cancer, you would call it stage 1 or 2, okay, as compared to other cancers. Mm-hmm. The prostate cancer, they try to make it, everybody's got to make it different. It's low intermediate, high intermediate, or high risk, right? Okay. So it's, and that really is defining whether it's still contained in the prostate or whether prostate, it's gone outside of the, you know, the containment of the gland itself and it's metastasized somewhere. So it's, the you know, another thing about the VA there, and there's about it's an interesting statistic that these guys pulled out. The general population in what's called SEER data, which is the big database for cancer in the United States, there's about 7% of the cases diagnosed are metastatic on their first diagnosis. You don't, that's the spot you don't want to be at, is metastatic on your first diagnosis. So inside the VA, 14% of the cases on first diagnosis are metastatic. So we're double the general population's metastatic disease diagnosis state, which means we're clearly not screening well enough inside the VA. And that's one of our, it's a big, big message that we put out. We're really trying to promote early screening, right? Just like breast cancer and a lot of cancers. If you're not looking for it, there it's a silent disease. There are very few side effects. There are very few indications.
So let me ask you a question for either one of you. What are the ages that you should go get a prostate screening? So I know that there's a different age for those who have prior history in their family, and then there's an age for those who don't have any history.
There's two things. There's it's kind of a complex question or answer, because there's those that have African Americans have a higher incidence rate, and it's a genomic issue, right? There's also men, any race that has prostate cancer in their history, right? So it's a genetic trait. And what we're promoting and pushing through Congress now is that anyone that's a veteran should all be categorized in what's called the high risk category, right? Or a high risk population, meaning that as a high risk population, we want you to go get screened at, we try to promote at the age 40. Some groups are trying to say age 35 to get a baseline. But because we're seeing a significant, statistically significant number of guys in their late 30s coming up with the cancer. Okay, so there's no harm in the screen. And this is the misnomer that the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, where they got caught, is that the definition of screening really is the blood test and the DRE and a discussion with your doctor. Okay. The problem was they were calling screening then a biopsy after that, if there was any indication. And a biopsy is literally a procedure. Okay. And now they're telling you, or some of the agencies out there and organizations like AUA, American Urological Association, and we're trying to push into to NCCN, the National Cancer Network. Yeah, as a standard to do an MRI along with or before you do a biopsy, because MRIs are so good now and so specialized and so accurate that they can actually see the difference in density or see your cancer if it's inside your prostate. And so your biopsies shouldn't be blind anymore. They call these a blind biopsy, which means they poke your biopsy 12 to 14 times with just a guess, hoping they get it, right? So, but with an MRI fusion biopsy, they know exactly where they're looking at. And I just had one a couple of months ago, 14 core biopsy, 14 pokes, and they targeted very specific areas. And on one of them, they found that, no kidding, there was a core of my biopsy that had a little bit of cancer had come back. We don't know why or how, but it came back, and it was what's called Gleason 8. So it was pretty extensive. It was growing pretty fast and dividing.
So, Mike, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I do have a question, because you mentioned earlier that you were misdiagnosed originally, and I think it's kind of important to talk about that, because like you, I was misdiagnosed 10 years ago when I was to later find out that I had cancer for almost 7 years without getting it treated. So I think it's important for people to hear stories like this, so they have to understand how real it is to be misdiagnosed. You have, out of the four people in this conversation, you have two people that were misdiagnosed with cancer. So if you could talk a little bit about that, I would really like to hear about it.
Sure. So I had left active duty in my, but I had elected to keep my annual physicals and my relationship with the military in the VA. I had just kept my medical records there, and I was at the Phoenix VA. And so if you remember back that whole 2014-15 nonsense that was going on with the scheduling and guys dying and all that kind of stuff, I was in line too. So I was actually working overseas though, and I would come back for an annual physical and get my blood work done. 2014, I came back, no problem, everything's good. You know, I leave and that I called in for my results, right? They wanted everybody just to call in at the time. So I called in for my results, and the nurse on the line said, "Oh, your cholesterol's high." And at the time, in 14, we weren't supposed to be doing PSAs. So she didn't read me any of the PSAs, and partly my fault, I didn't ask her. So that's my fault as well. Well, was it? After research, we had found out going back that it was at 5.7 from 2.5, which means it had doubled in about a year, and I should have had a biopsy, and it would have been caught and then I would have been, you know, treated appropriately.
And earlier.
Yeah, earlier. And I went away for a year and I came back. And this year I came back and I hung around and I made him give me the results. And the physician actually was paying attention and actually looked at it as well. And my PSA was about 14.7.
Wow.
So, I you know, I see Susie's face. I know she knows the rest of the story, right? And so now I'm in a different category, right? I'm in a, okay, now you should be taking action. I mean, what really upset me with the Phoenix VA is I went to the urologist after that, and he told me, they said, come back in 29 days. And that's significant because of that scheduling stuff, right? They keep it that 29-day mark, right? So I came back. I went the next day. I just forced myself in, and senior enough, I just walked in and said, you know, I need to see this guy. And because I knew what this elevated PSA meant, right? This is a pretty high indication that with the doubling times and the previous record of PSAs, that something's not right. And the urologist at the VA at the time said, well, just come back in 6 months. Yeah, you probably got cancer, and we'll just deal with it then. Because all we can offer you here is a radical prostatectomy.
Wow.
Okay, that's not what I wanted to do. It's not anything. So I walked out and called lucky enough to have a family member by marriage that I called, and she was one of the better radiation oncologists in the country. And before we got off the call, I was scheduled for a biopsy at Banner Health in Phoenix outside the VA. And so they did the biopsy, and sure enough, I was what was called Gleason 4+3. And I went up to Seattle and was treated before the end of the year with radiation with a CyberKnife, which is what's called a stereotactic body radiation therapy, which is a very precise kind of radiation. It's 5 treatments over, you know, 5 days. And
same thing my brother had when he initially was diagnosed.
Yeah.
And with ball bearings?
No.
With the ball bearing, something like that. That, yeah.
No, you're thinking of brachytherapy, which is this, what they call the seed implants, right? And this is not, this is a external beam, but extremely accurate beam, and it uses target tracking technology to track your prostate, even if it's moving during the treatment. So it's that's what I went through. But really the deal, Orlando, to answer your question about this, is that the mistreatment or the misdiagnosis was, you know, I'm going to take part of the blame, is that, you know, I didn't pursue it. I wasn't, who pursues their prostate? I mean, who, now I do, right? Now I tell guys to do it. But at the time, I can tell you that people just don't ask about it, right? They just don't, a lot of guys, I mean, there's men out there that don't even know they have got it, right? They don't even know what one is.
Yep. There's something that's like, a lot of that has, when I go out and do educational outreach, I'll say to somebody, have you had your PSA drawn? Oh, no, you know, I don't want to go through the prep and all that kind of stuff. It's like, I promise this is not your, we're not doing a colonoscopy. We're drawing a blood test.
It's the other end. Yeah, it's the other
side. The other end. Yeah.
They don't know that they have a prostate. They don't know where it is. They don't know what it does.
Yeah.
And now they want to go, you know, do this horrendous prep to get blood drawn.
Yeah,
no, we're not going to draw the blood from your prostate. I promise.
Or guys make it a joke and they're like, "Well, I don't want a thumb in my butt." Like that's usually the first joke to me.
Don't fear. Yeah. You know, I'm
don't
sorry.
Don't fear the finger. No, you're good. That's a great. That's a great saying. You should make a T-shirt.
Yeah, right. And it's it really is an awareness thing. We've done we've done a couple of trade shows that when we could go to trade shows, at the VFW, their national convention, right? And and we actually did blood screening events, or we did PSA events there. So we would screen for people right there at site at the trade show, and do an analysis afterwards. And we would screen about 100 guys a day, and we would run out of materials. We just couldn't get them in there fast enough, right? And so we we would see about 30 or so, a little over 30 people with elevated PSA. And the program was, and still is that you then get contacted and you're told your PSA is elevated and you need to go see your doctor and schedule a follow-up visit with the guy. So we're conducting that service free of charge, helping guys to learn about this. But the conversations we had were absolutely sometimes hilarious. You know, guys like, you know, PSA or, you know, what prostate, isn't that something my dog has or something? And, it, you know, we try to tell them that it's, you know, prostate, it's only spelled with one R and
not prostrate. You know,
yeah. Prostrate.
And, you know, your floor somewhere.
Yeah, right. And, you know, it's not the way you lay down. It's, you know, that sort of thing. It's the actual gland that helps you in your body. It's, you know, it's, you know, used for sexual function. And, you know, there's a couple of key things you need to learn about it that, you know, there's these two nerve bundles that run through it. One, it controls ejaculation and erectile dysfunction, and the other one controls your urinary side of things and your incontinence issue. So you need to take care of this thing, right? And you need to pay attention to what it's doing and why.
I'm sure if they started the conversation with most young men that this will affect your sex life, that they probably would get in line to get it checked more frequently.
You know what, Orlando, you're exactly right. And it's that's some of the, I think, the hard hitting advertising that and awareness that needs to be.
Absolutely.
And I think we have to make it some sort of sometimes humorous and sometimes, you know, that's what gets people's, you know, crazy attention in this modern age or whatever. But it, you know, if you want to use it, you know, you're going to lose it if you don't take care of this thing. And, you know, and you can't wait and you can't ignore it. And it's not that big of a deal if you do catch it early. It really isn't. You know, it's to me now, it's a big deal because, you know, we waited, it expanded. I'm now in the second recurrence of it. And so I'm taking some pretty strong actions to get rid of it right now. I'm in good enough shape and I understand the journey and that sort of thing. So, but I wish I'd have found it early. I mean, now it's like one of the things where it's no one's fault, really. I mean, let's take different blame. The VA says, you know, when you ask them, they said, well, we sent you a letter that. Yeah.
Thanks for following up on that.
Right? So I'm working in Asia, right? I'm working in Southeast Asia, and they send me a letter. I'm like, you know, really? Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate that. You know, so, you know, it should have been more alerted, like, you know, hey, you have a high, I would call you on the phone or do something or an email or something, you know, and that, so we're trying to change that policy as well.
Is that something that they're, you know, focusing on with Representative Dunn's solidified clinical pathway that he's got in the House?
Yeah, there's, yes, Susie, I think. As a part of, there's a bill that's been introduced. It's called HR 6092, and it was introduced by Congressman Neil Dunn, who is from Florida, and he is he's still an active urologist. And the name of the bill is called Veterans Prostate Cancer Treatment and Research Act. There's other legislation also that's out right now that's being considered. One is because for some reason we're seeing a high rate of incidents, higher, even higher than veterans in general, but military aviators we're seeing almost a 200% increase over the general population of veterans. Oh. We don't know why. Nobody will know for decades, but the numbers are bearing through, right? And so, Congresswoman Luria and Congressman Kinzinger introduced a bill for military aviation cancer research. And they're also seeing other cancers like thyroid and some brain cancers and things like that. I mean, esophageal is a big one. And so, but prostate leads the pack again. And we don't know if it's exposure to UV radiation at altitude. We don't know if it's radar radiation. We don't know if it's chemicals on the flight deck or on the flight line, ships radars, you know, and we're all in the military on a base. Everybody's exposed to whether it's handling depleted uranium. You're around cleaning chemicals. Everything's got to be clean all the time, right, Julian? So you don't know if you're breathing in those things, whether that's having some effect. You know, the smell of jet fuel and jet exhaust and that kind of thing. Who knows if any of that's causing a problem? We don't know. We may find out someday what that cause is, but we just know statistically that the numbers are higher. And so there's some legislation to actually provide resources, money for the active Department of Defense, both Air Force and Navy, to do research on this. Not so much the helicopter aviators. It's more the jet pilots or the guys like the E-2 guys, AWACS people, the cargo guys, but also the fighter aircraft as well.
And I think one of the things that just comes up as a big topic, not just with the veterans, Mike, but you know, I'm just talking about in general. I mean, one of the things is I think is prevalent. It's just the education and the awareness of not just prosecutors, just in general. Okay, I think we need to make better steps at keeping tabs of family history, because I don't know anything about my family history, a couple of ones. And then for us, it just seems to become something important when we have a brush with it. Now, obviously, Orlando and yourself, you know, had to actually go through, you know, treatments and things like that. But even I had something from something that my older brother and my father were suffering from, which is diverticulitis. Something as simple as my guts get inflamed because I eat something bad. And then next thing I know, again, joking about it, like we've talked about it, you know, I go to an Asian GI and she gives me double penetration by way of colonoscopy and an endoscopy. And that's how I joke about it. But then the next two words that I remember is colon cancer. And I was like, oh, okay. And that's when it just kind of hits us. I mean, it got taken care of. It got treated. I'm cancer-free. But now, just like a lot of us now, I'm high risk. Now, every 3 years, I have to go through this, Asian double penetration, if I get an Asian doctor wherever I end up. But, but I think it's one of those things that it's very important, because family history, you know, just go to those physicals. Orlando and I have talked about it, men in general, but just even Hispanic men, we don't want to know. It's a pinchy racket that these doctors have. We don't want to know. But then, you know, we end up in these situations where it could have been as easily as just a blood draw.
God forbid,
a finger. But
it just needs to be part of the it just needs to be part of the conversation. You know, it has men and across the spectrum of all men, right? Like, these are conversations that we need to be having with our sons at early ages about their health and what to look at once they get older. The things that it's no different than having the conversation about the birds and the bees with your children. No one told me that I could possibly get some type of an illness or cancer, and this is how you check it. But, you know, like myself, I share my stories not because I'm looking for, you know, somewhat a shoulder to cry on or affirmation from others or, you know, attention. It's not for that. I share the stories because I was 35 years old, you know, freshly married. I had a 1-year-old daughter, and then all of a sudden I'm fighting cancer. These are not things I shouldn't have been going through this. Like, I should have been focusing on other things in my life, like buying my first house as a family or taking family photos. I don't even planning a vacation. Like, these are not things that you should be worried about. So when I talk about these things, I'm just hoping that one person will be like, well, shit, let me go check this out. Like, I've even gone as far as I've seen photographs of people that have like a bulge in their neck, and I'll message them and I'm like, yo, did you get that checked out? Because that's big. Like, that's what happened.
Stories
to me.
On TV. TV, I mean, yeah. In absolutely. LA, what's his name? The guy that does the home renovation thing.
Yeah.
Tarek,
I forgot
his name. Al Musa.
Yeah. And someone just phoned into him.
And said, hey, listen, you need to get that checked out.
I had a 7-centimeter mass growing out of the side of my neck. It literally increased my collar size by an inch and a half. And the first doctor I ever saw for it to ask, the first question she asked me was, does it hurt? And I said, no. And she said, you have nothing to worry about. Straight faced. So what does a 23-year-old, 24-year-old do? Like, all right, she told me not to worry about it. Yeah. So I just went on my merry way. And so I changed doctors because I had changed insurance providers. And when I saw that doctor and he saw my neck, he's like, his exact words were, holy shit, what is that? And I was like, I don't know. The first doctor told me not to worry about it. And he's like, that doctor's an idiot. And then he pulled up the stool and then he started using words like, go see an oncologist and cancer. And all of a sudden, like, you know, all the blood just gets drained out of my body. Yeah, I'm just like, you know. And even then, after they removed it, they still diagnosed me benign, that I didn't have cancer. And then come to find out, I got another little lump, you know, 5-6 years ago now. And I went back to the doctor, and then all of a sudden everything changes. They're like, oh, well, it was cancer the whole time. We just, the lab misdiagnosed you. So I had cancer in my body for almost 11 years.
Yeah.
The most fortunate part is that it's a slow growth. Thyroid cancer is the slowest growing cancers of all the cancers.
But you know, they say that about prostate too. You know, a lot of guys will tell you that it's this slow growing and it's, you know, don't worry about it and that sort of thing. Well,
yeah, and that's normally right after they say, oh, you have the good cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's funny because that's what people have told me. Oh, well, at least you have thyroid cancer. I'm like, oh yeah, that's because that's exactly what I was hoping for when I woke up in the morning.
Yeah, it's a good day, right?
Yeah.
No, but the real numbers around are to talk about prostate cancer is, you know, they have this sort of artificial floor, this number 4 on your PSA test, right? And that number 4, we're trying to get rid of that. That it's a misnomer. It's really... Mm-hmm. What people need to be aware of is if they're going for annual physicals and they're getting their PSAs, right? It's a couple of things. It's the
and a PSA is just blood work up, right?
It's just blood work. It's called prostate specific antigen test, and it just comes out of your blood work, right? And it's not perfect, not 100%, but it's, you know, but it's what we got today. We're trying to get new research to look at it, you know, hence the programs that Susie and I go to DC and promote. But with PSA, what you do is you're looking at different levels of that. The only way that PSA gets into your bloodstream is from your prostate, or from a prostate cancer drive from your prostate. And so, or it can come from cancer is one. That's the one you don't want. It can come from like strenuous exercise, like bike riding, or being hit really hard or something like that, it gets inflamed, or from sex. Whenever you have sex, it's excreted into your blood, or from prostatitis, or like BHP, which is, you know,
benign prostatic hypertrophy.
Yeah, so it's an inflamed prostate, right? So they give you antibiotics, and it kind of goes away. So infection of your prostate. Think of it that way.
So it's very similar in common when we have our annual physicals, when you're talking about protein in your urine, which is an elevated form of that. That's because from, you know, exercise, if you're very active in exercise, you can have high elevations of protein in your urine. You know, sexual activity can also cause that. Even if you were sick like a week before, you had okay. Yeah. Now, I do have a question for Susie though.
Okay, but going back to what Mike said about that artificial ceiling or the floor on your PSA of 4, they tell you the closer to 0, the better it is, but no greater than 4. My brother was diagnosed with prostate cancer at 3.6. Yeah. And it was the result of him going for his annual physical and having a PSA of 1.6 and going through antibiotics a couple of times to make sure that it wasn't that he had a urinary tract infection, to then having a 2.8, to then, I mean, it's like over the course of like 6 or 8 months, PSA gradually kept increasing till
kept doubling.
The doctor said, hey, you know, I think you need to go see a urologist.
So Julian, before you ask your question, so is the PSA part of a man's general physical? What if I go to the doctor, is that part of that blood panel they run, or do I have to specifically ask?
You have to specifically ask for it based on your age.
Okay. So
that's what we were talking about, that USPSTF. Probably what, Mike, 2015 was when we got them to change. No, it's like that.
It was 2018.
Yeah, still a D, grade D. They were discouraging physicians from doing routine PSA screening.
Yeah.
And through our lobbying efforts, we've managed to get them to increase the PSA grade by the USPSTF to a C, meaning that they're leaving this to see your doctor, and they're leaving the decision between a man and his physician based on his age, his symptomatology, family history, race, you know, all sorts of things.
They'll tell you today, they won't start it until you're 50 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, good luck trying to get, and you need to ask for it, right? And it's $100 in a visit. The test actually costs about 47 cents, but they're going to charge you $100 for your visit, right? So,
and that's part of what we're trying to do right now through the lobbying efforts. And I think Virginia has been one of the first states that passed it, that the PSA screens are being done as a component of a man's wellness exam with no copayment or out-of-pocket. And it should be considered the same thing that they do a woman's mammogram. It's routine screening.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're just kind of jumping on that one. So Mike, maybe you can answer this question. Mina, I know that you're working, it's through the VA, and that's a separate entity from anybody who's still on active duty. So over 40 physicals, we all understand that at over 40 physical, there's a couple of things that you have to get is, you know, you got to get the blood screen, you got to get the EKG, you got to get the, you know, the eye to check for ocular pressure, things like that. Is that something that they're working towards for people who are currently in as well as to add that PSA check for the males? I mean, because I know that for the females, I think they do the pelvic exam. I don't know. I don't ask because it's none of my business. And in today's, I might get in trouble for it. So, but for like the males, for those over 40 physicals, which is anywhere from 39 and a half, if you happen to fall within your physical at 39 and a half or above, you are supposed to get that over 40 physical. Is that something that is being worked towards to add that PSA screening into current active duty or even maybe even reserve National Guardsmen?
I hope so. I don't know. I can't tell you exactly what the requirements are on it. I don't think at 40, they're still probably staying away from it because of the guidelines that were set. So we still try to encourage guys to do it. I don't know. It's a great, great question. We're also trying to push the VA to do it as well, to get it down to 40 to screen for guys. But we tell everybody just to do it. We try to put out to say do 40. And I like to tell like my guy, my sons, I tell them 35, they're both 40. So I tell my sons 35 for a baseline and do it annually at 40. It doesn't, what's it going to hurt?
And just for some of you listeners out there that you know, I know they're speaking specific examples about the VA, but for a lot of us men out there that have just private insurance, or you can tell a doctor that you want a specific screening, because I force my doctors to, like my endocrinologist and my primary care physician, because I get my blood drawn every 3 months. I force them to do to check my vitamin D, to check my testosterone, to check my PSA, because my grandfather passed away of prostate cancer. My dad's had some issues with his prostate. So I was 35 years old. I got mine checked, and no one bought me dinner after or before the procedure, but I did not fear the finger, but we're going to brand that somehow. But yeah, so, you know, a lot of people have a tendency to let doctors just do whatever they want because they're the doctor. It's important. I tell people all the time, like, you know, I've had some friends that have had cancer, have had major medical issues, and they come to me for advice. And I've told them, I was like, it's okay to, it's okay to ask questions and challenge the doctor. Don't go Googling things to fear yourself, to make yourself more fearful and to see all those statistics. But, you know, do some research, you know, get in depth, read some research papers, or go to the Mayo Clinic and get that information. It's okay to go back to, it's okay to go back at the doctor and be like, look, no, I don't feel comfortable with that. Let's run that test again. Or, you know, this runs in my family. I want to make sure, because in all reality, I mean, we're paying for it. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. You know,
yeah. And when I had my situation, the first person I called was Orlando. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that pushed me to go get a second opinion, go to an oncologist. I saw an oncologist, I saw a GI, I saw a...
see them all, man. Hit that deductible. That's what it's there for.
I saw
it work for you.
I saw everything from the waist down. Yeah. And
I can say that when my brother was diagnosed with prostate cancer, he was diagnosed by a urologist who said, yeah, maybe you need to go see a radiation oncologist because you're probably going to need to have radiation after I take your prostate out. Well, we went there, and I had already done research on CyberKnife. My best girlfriend was the executive director of a CyberKnife center, and so we're sitting in the radiation oncologist's office, and you know, we're having this conversation. And I said, "So, what do you think about CyberKnife?" He goes, "Oh, that's still experimental." And so he and I had our little exchange back and forth about it hasn't been experimental for extracranial applications since such and such a date. And no, you don't know what you're talking about. And we walked out of the office, and my brother looked at me and he said, "What the hell just happened?" I said, "We just asked a Toyota dealer to tell us about a Honda."
Pretty much.
Ask him to tell us about something that he didn't do.
Yeah.
And, you know, during the diagnostic process of getting his treatment started, he had four separate opinions from four different types of providers.
That's great. I mean, that's the way you got to do it.
With the exception of one gentleman, all of the opinions were different.
Yeah. And it's a different field, and you've got to learn, and the knowledge is a huge deal. That's why we believe in education, not just advocacy, right? So you've got to teach people what options are there, and cancer is different for everybody, right? I mean, it's a different thing, and it can be a different story. So you have to learn. It gets to be a pretty technical subject, and you got to pay attention, and you need to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's hard sometimes, but it's your body, it's your life, it's your mission. I mean, and we tell the vets and that kind of stuff that, you know, listen, your health is your responsibility. It's not anybody else's. It's not the doctor's responsibility. It's not the VA's responsibility. It's yours. You're the one that has to ask for it. You're the one that has to take care of it and know about it. Yeah, so it's, the guy down the street's not going to care. He's not going to take care of you. So it's really your deal. So you got to get involved. You have to get involved.
I didn't have said it better myself.
And the thing is, that one thing you got to understand about the medical. So I don't know if you're... Susie, you remember now, but for some time, I was in the medical field. I was a paramedic. But when I was going through all that schooling, my paramedic instructor said, just remember, doctors are practicing. That's why they call it a practice. It's not an exact science. They are practicing on you. So you just kind of have to keep it with a grain of salt. However, I did want to kind of shift gears on something, and I want to talk a little bit about Zero. We talked about Zero, but, you know, I know that you're very active on social media, Susie, as far as with Zero and promoting a lot of their events, you know, the 5Ks, the golf tournaments and things like that. And all that was, and it's wonderful. Pre-COVID, now we're going into a post-pandemic where we have social distancing and all that. Has this been a challenge? Continuing, because I know that you mentioned that you had a virtual 5K and things like that. But
I ran a virtual 5K in the rain on Saturday morning for one of our champions that died. It has impacted us in a lot of ways. But what we're trying hard to do is, COVID may have affected our contact, but we're not going to let it affect our impact. And so we will continue to do those virtual 5Ks. The funds that we raise from the 5Ks, the Ironman triathlons, the golf events, the whatevers that we do, are what help to fund the patient assistance programs and the patient support. We have a free nurse case manager service that we offer to anybody that's having issues trying to navigate the waters of health insurance. You know, I personally go out and do a lot of education and outreach in the community. And I will put up my little zero table with my sign and all of my educational material outside of the BB&T Center before a hockey game, or at the Marlin Stadium before a baseball game, just trying to reach that one man that will listen to me. That was my promise to my brother was I till my dying breath, what you went through will not have been in vain if I can just make a difference for one person.
Absolutely.
I strive to do that. I mean, and I feel really sorry for the guys in Publix, or the guys that work in the post office, or the guys that change my tires at Tire Kingdom, because I ask those questions. Have you had your PSA check? you know, it's like, God forbid, you know, and it's like, and I know that it's not necessarily comfortable for them to talk to me about.
Yeah, it's like, who's that attractive lady asking me about that part of me that I don't even know about, you know? Yeah.
You know, I think it was Orlando said, you know, it's like sometimes you have to use humor. There was one hockey game that I was outside with my friend Maria, and I had bought bags of diamond almonds. And when we couldn't get people to approach us and talk to us, I walked against the crowd of all of these guys walking in with their macho attitude with their buddies saying, "Nuts for your nuts." talk to me. Let me help you. Let me make a difference for you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'll say, you know, I promise I'm not going to check your prostate in public. And if I did, I've got really skinny fingers.
Well, you probably have a lot smaller fingers than the doctor who checked my prostate. That's for sure.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah. And I guess my frustration is that, you know, I love you guys. I really do. But y'all are a bunch of hard heads.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's women when they get diagnosed with breast cancer, they circle the wagons, they call their friends, they get their support system together. You guys crawl off into your man cave and hide.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what happens. Yeah. That's that cultural issue that's got to be addressed.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's like, forgive me for this. I know that sexual prowess has a whole lot to do with a man's ego.
Mm-hmm.
But you know something? There's a lot of us women that will love you just as much from the neck up as we will from the waist down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Damn right. Absolutely.
I would rather love you alive than dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And these messages, these issues are all part of this journey and part of this reason or this cause, what we're doing. Right. And it's really bringing, this is the awareness component that needs to be really professed and really, endorsed and brought out for a lot of, I mean, we talk about, you know, look at the state of the nation. We talk about reform of things. And this is one of those, you know, healthcare reform issues. If we just got men to go to the doctor, once a year, the reform in our healthcare system would be just amazing.
It would also have a drastic effect on what we spell our healthcare spend.
Yeah.
I audit medical bills for a living. And I can tell you that it's a whole lot cheaper to treat a guy early diagnosis than it is once they've got metastatic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the whole point of this podcast, right, Julian? Like we stumbled into it by accident. Like when we first started this podcast, it was just a couple of dudes that we wanted to make fun of certain social issues or current events and laugh about it. And it took one episode of Julie and I sharing, you know, our journey with mental health and the challenges that we faced, and it opened up Pandora's box. We had other men reaching out to us privately and saying, "Dude, like, I can't believe that you talked about this. This is something that I've been going through for a long time. It's been affecting my family. You guys motivated me to go get help. And, you know, we could probably count on one hand how many people reached out to us on that particular episode. And that's enough, man. Like I told Julian, like I was in shock. Like some of these guys brought me to tears because you never would think of it. You know, that they were having issues by looking at their pictures on social media or whatever the case may be. So, you know, after that episode, Julian and I sat down, we had a long conversation. Like, look, we might not have all the answers, and some people might consider us dumb in a lot of retrospects or maybe anti-manly, but I really think that we stumbled across something. Like, we need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and helping people have these type of conversations. And regardless of what the issue is, whether it's about, you know, marriage or relationship, sex, mental health, your physical health, you know, just getting over going to the doctor, raising your children, whatever the case may be, you know, guys who don't like football, like whatever, like, you know, like we talk about it all. And I think it's important. And I really appreciate what you guys do. Cause we need champions like you guys out there discussing these conversations and educating us and, you know, being willing to, I know it can't be easy with everybody's one mind going to a sporting event with some lady dangling nuts in their face, trying to get their attention. So I know I appreciate that. So thank
you. I mean, we applaud you and your efforts. I mean, even if you stumbled upon it because you were exploring social media, we applaud your efforts to keep going. And, you know, hey, listen, let us do it again.
Real quick, guys, if you could please, if you guys could both just tell us either where people can go for more information or where they can follow you on social media for continuous education on prostate cancer and veteran programs for prostate cancer, please.
Sure. Yeah, you can. Anybody can reach me at vetsprostate.org. So that's plural vets, the word prostate.org. And my email is mike.crosby@vetsprostate.org, just like the website. So reach out. Happy to help anytime. You know, we're happy to give you whatever information that we can. And, you know, I'll turn it over to Susie because, I mean, and please understand that Veterans Prostate Cancer Awareness and Zero are teamed together now. We've now formed a veterans page on veterans link on Zero, and it has incredible resources. It's one of the certified, I would call it certified by a lot of cancer organizations as the place to go for educational resources for men that want to learn about prostate cancer and how you can get involved and how you can help and but also more importantly, from a patient perspective, it will teach you what your prostate is and what it does. That one website, that one source will give you all of those sources.
What you were asking me about, you know, has COVID adversely affected what it is that we're trying to do? And I have to say unequivocally, yes, because everybody's living in fear and I don't have the ability to go out and do that face-to-face outreach anymore. The education, Zero has provided me with a wealth of information as far as diagnostic tools and something even as simple as a depiction of a family tree to be able to go back and try to pinpoint what you were saying before about, my grandfather, my great grandfather who had, you know, what type of an illness or a disease. And, you know, specifically, you know, they've identified that the BRCA1 and BRCA2 gene mutations are directly responsible for some of the metastatic processes in prostate cancer. So what we initially thought was just for breast cancer and, you know, your ovarian cancer and stuff like that has now been attributed or beneficial for the diagnosis and treatment of prostate cancer. And that's part of the reason why they're doing so many things with genomics and gene sequencing and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
but zero, the educational profiles, free webinars, the services that they have available. Their website is zero, Z-E-R-O, cancer.org. And it will give you everything from a questionnaire about how to speak to your doctor, a toolkit for the newly diagnosed patient as to what to expect. There's a link in there for the nurse navigator services called Zero 360. We have a mentor program where it will match a man that's been newly diagnosed or that has just had a recurrence someone else to, you know, help walk that pathway with them. As Mike said, they've got the veterans program, and we just developed a caregiver connector, because that caregiver that's in the background that is trying to be the end all and be all to walk that path with someone and provide the care and the support and the resources and, you know, all that kind of stuff. They need someplace that they can go to vent. Absolutely. So Zero has created, you know, that as far as the caregivers are concerned, and they're matched with someone that has been that caregiver. Absolutely. Like I was with my brother.
Awesome. That's awesome. That's a great program. Is there any social media aspects that people can follow? Is Zero on social media?
They are. Zero Cancer. We've got our Zero Connect is our online. It's the only thing. It's an online support group.
Okay.
But yeah, zero. I can't remember whether it's under Zero, the End of Prostate Cancer, or Zero Prostate Cancer. Okay. One of the two.
I'll go ahead and I'll tag it in the show notes for reference.
They're on Instagram. They're on Twitter. They're on Facebook. They're, you know, everywhere.
Excellent.
So, and, you know, so I'm just trying to get that, you know, the information out there. Is key.
Absolutely. Well, we really appreciate your time, Susie, and thank you for jumping on board with us. I promise you that you have two new champions that are out there and continue to talk about this, and we're going to make sure that we will try to educate our fellow brothers, our stubborn-headed brothers out there, to get themselves. Yep. To not fear the finger. Don't fear the finger. But thank you again. I really appreciate it. I can't stress to you how much this was awesome. So thank you.
I'm honored to have been asked to do this, with September being Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. And, yesterday Jules and I celebrated 2-year anniversary of my brother's death. So, prostate cancer kicked him in the behind. But I refuse to use the phrase "he lost his battle," because he didn't lose anything. The journey just came to an end.
Well, guys, that was a lot of great information for everyone out there. And, you know, I think one of the key lessons we learned, Julian, in this particular episode, aside of all the statistics and information about prostate cancer and what's going on in the VA, for our country's veterans, when it comes to diagnosing prostate cancer and for that matter, other diseases, is that men need to get out of their own way, right? They need to push the ego aside and take their health seriously. You know, we've said this how many times, Julian?
Since day one. And if we're going to like feed into the male ego, just think of it as your career. Nobody's going to, you know, worry about your career more than you are. Yep. It's the same thing about your health. Nobody's going to worry about your health more than you will. So we need to take that active approach just the same way as we want to, you know, progress in career and be successful. Well, we need to take the exact same approach about our health, our mental health, our physical health, you know, our family health, all that. Thanks. Nobody else is going to do it for us. So we definitely have to take that active role.
Absolutely. You know, we're all given one life, right? It's a gift. And it's our job to build on that life and to take care of the initial investment, and for you to nurture yourself, take care of yourself, because without your health, you have nothing. You don't have a career. You don't have a family life. It's okay to be selfish when it comes to your personal health. So take care of yourself. Go to the doctor. Don't fear the finger. Check yourself regularly. Demand great expectations from your doctors, whoever that doctor is. You know, don't be afraid to ask for a second, third, or fourth opinion. And most importantly, just take care of yourself. I think this is a good stopping point for today's episode. For more information and resources on what we talked about today, check out our show notes. And we'll also have it on our website, www.invinciblybroken.com. You can follow us on social media by simply searching Invincibly Broken on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, if this is the first time that you're listening or you are a reoccurring listener, please give us a like, give us a review on your favorite podcast platform that you're listening to us on. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. It's a big help to us as well. If you want to follow me personally, you can follow me on Instagram at Invincibly_Orlando.
And if you want to follow me personally, you can follow me at Invincibly_Julian.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of Invincibly Broken. I hope that it was insightful and educational for you. Please go out, talk to your loved ones. If you have any male friends, let them know to listen to this episode, or simply just tell them that they should be taking care of themselves and go to the doctor and get checked out. Till next week. Ciao.
Peace.
Don't fear the finger. It's not that bad. It's only the first knuckle. Nah, I lied. It's the whole finger. And it's two of them.
They can tell you what you're thinking.
And stop recording.